This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, everyone. This is Richard Mabian, and welcome to Eco Radio. We are doing a little change up here, so the program's going to be different than what you normally have been used to hearing. It's going to be kind of like one of our old shows back before we started this new format. Mike Murphy had to leave on emergency. His mom took a turn for the worse. And that was like about last Wednesday, and then we got the word yesterday that his mother passed. So I'm going to start this show with us taking a moment of silence in showing our support and our condolences to Mike Murphy. So please give me that moment of silence, if you would. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. His mom was able to make it to a ripe young age of 91 years old, and she had a very lovely life. And the thing that I think is so special about this, Mike had a chance to be there at her side. So, with Mike, if you're listening in, if you're not, and you get a chance to listen back at this on our archives, know that we love you, man. We care about you, and we hope everything goes okay for you back there, and we look forward to you getting back here with us in the city, man. God bless you. Okay, now let's get to this show. So because we changing our format a little bit and not having our normal guests in the way that we have, you're stuck this evening with me. And first of all, we got Todd. John Todd came in to replace Mike. So, Todd, John, thanks a lot. Appreciate you being here, working the board for us. I think he's going to be here this week. And if John can't get back, even possibly next week. Also, next week we have John Kerman coming in. He's going to come in. And really, we need John to come in and help us understand what's going on with this Keystone Pipeline stuff. I told him I'd mention the fact that the court made a decision to continue operating and planting those pipes for that Keystone project, which this is not the decision that was that people wanted to see, that the environmentalists wanted to see. So I told him that I wouldn't make a mess out of it trying to give you my opinion of it. I would save that for him next week. So please, whatever you do, tune back in. John's going to give a full rundown on this Keystone Pipeline deal, to include the thing about the court making the decision on it, whatever that's about. I won't even try to make it out, but just tune in next week for that. That's the news we have for you. We didn't have the news, our normal news for you. I don't have anything about events. So like I said, what you get this week is me. Some of you may be new listeners to the show. Some of you have been listening to us before we started our new format. One of the things I used to do at this time of year in November, I would have a show right before Thanksgiving that dealt with what's been going on in the environmental movement for the year. So what's been happening in 2013? And then I would come back in December and talk about what are the expectations for December. So this show is our show. I'm opening up the lines right now, and we're getting ready to talk. We're getting ready to talk. You have 2 to 3 options. You can talk about what I'm talking about, or you can call up and talk about what you'd like to talk about, as long as this is within reason, and as long as you're not calling up preaching me some sermon. I don't want anybody preaching me a sermon. Let's try to have a decent conversation. You know, there's some things you want to get off your mind. There's some things that I want to continue to talk about myself. The number here is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. All I say is just remind you, just be respectful. Okay, let's start talking about this past last week. I had an opportunity to go to Detroit for a conference that was with the National Alliance of Black School Educators. And, I mean, it was about 2,000-3,000 folks, teachers, all kinds of administrators, superintendents, school support kind of people that was there at this conference. It was unbelievable. And I went up and I was asked to come set up a booth representing the environmental and conservation world, because this group had one of the instructional part of the group, the one that talks about your classroom subjects and materials and curriculums and stuff, had invited me. I met this young lady in D.C. at a conference, and she invited me to come to New Orleans a couple of years ago and speak to her portion of the conference. And the one thing she and I both discovered is that our school teachers, believe it or not, our school teachers are lacking in their understanding and knowledge of the environmental and conservation movements going on in this country. So she wanted me to come to Detroit. She sent me an invitation and invited me to come to Detroit to set up a booth to introduce people to the conservation and environmental movement and concepts. And in preparation of the conference being in Kansas City, Missouri next year. In other words, this National Alliance of Black School Educators have already established that they will be in Kansas City, Missouri in 2014. And when they come here, she wanted me to be a mainline speaker in her section. So that is what got me there. I got in touch with, of course, my Sierra Club comrades, and we all got together, and along with other environmental groups that I work with, and I went up there loaded down, loaded to bear with the environmental not message to be able to pass out and talk about to these black educators. It was quite an experience. In fact, last week I had pretty much lost my voice. I'm just starting to get my voice back from talking so daggone much. I already talk a lot, but it was amazing the caliber of conversations I had to carry on. But one thing that I noticed, and it's kind of prompting me to talk about it now, is how little people really know about it. You know, when you stop and talk to people and ask them where they at as far as this greening of America stuff that's going on, you'd be surprised how little people really know. I use the simple thing of recycling. I would ask them, are you recycling? And I was just amazed at how many people. I mean, these are school educators. You know, if we don't have our educators recycling, if we don't have the people who are teaching our kids committed to environmentalism and conservation, I mean, we need to regroup in what we are here trying to do. Which brings me to the theme of my conversation tonight. I am somewhat disappointed with the environmental community. I think that it has allowed itself to become a political issue. Now, when I first got started in being a part of this movement, excuse me, I sat in a session with the co-founder of the Green Party, John Rosenbrink. And he made a statement. He said he thought that the environmental movement was the first movement since the civil rights movement that had a chance to actually had a chance to change policy in this country. He said he hoped that the leaders of the environmental movement did not make the same mistake that the leaders of the civil rights movement did and allow the movement to become a political issue. As soon as he said it, I completely understood what he was talking about, because, see, I was a part of that civil rights movement. I was a part of the, well, I won't say leader, I was a worker. But I had a chance to see how devalued the efforts being done became. But at the same time, I also saw how we were able to, some of us were able to break away and kind of form our own kind of activities to continue working with people. Me, I formed the janitorial service because I could hire the caliber of people that needed jobs. Back then, the same thing as now, people need jobs. I couldn't go out and create a computer company and hire a bunch of people out of the black community. But I had no problem with the janitorial service being able to hire people and get them working. And then once you have people working, then you can work on your IMs and your soft skills and your various parts of a person's behaviors and lives that need help. You can get involved with the families. You can get involved with the peoples. You know, the first thing you got to do is you have to provide people with a way to earn a decent income. Well, here we are back now with the environmental movement. We got programs on top of programs. We have organizations on top of organizations. Recently, I attended an equity discussion here in Kansas City, Missouri, with some of your heavyweights. And you know, and the one thing that I told the group, which I still probably haven't been forgiven for, was I felt like they were replacing too many nonprofit programs in our low-income communities. And that's great, but when you bring in nonprofit programs, they only there until the funds run out. Then when the funds are gone, the program's gone. That's not how you create sustainability. While granted, yes, we need nonprofit programs. They like seed programs. They like seed money to get people in the position to make things happen. But associated with those programs need to be some way for those programs to become sustainable. We're not making profit. We're not making ways for people to be able to progress from these programs. We're just out there teaching. We know we teach people everything. I mean, if you lose your job, go to Workforce Partnership. They'll train you. They won't hire. They won't give you a job, but they'll train you. We're training people all over the country, but we're not hiring people. So what I'm saying, we need to come back to the drawing table, the drawing board, and start seeing if we can't design programs that's going to end with some profit being made. You know, for the life of me, I can't, if you think about all the trillions of dollars that's being spent out here in this country on social service programs, even in the environmental movement, if you think about the hundreds of thousands of dollars that are spent, millions of dollars that are spent every year, and the number one problem that we have going on in this country is we have a lack of jobs. People can't listen to you when they need a job. So consequently, we out there just preaching to the choir. I mean, food programs, love them. The food deserts, love them. Love the concept. Love the fact people are working on them. But there's no one getting hired. And so, you know, until we get to a point that we make economics a part of our development processes in this country, we're steadily just beating on the drum. And that's what I see going on. Last week, I was out of town again last week because I was in Detroit, and Mike played that interview I had recorded with a professor from UMKC, Michael Fish. And I'm going to tell you what, that was such a great interview. I'm going to have Michael in for a show, and we're going to sit up here and talk again, and I'll open up the line just like I have now. Remember, it's 816-931-5534. If you want to call in and join me, 816-931-5534. And Mike and I had this conversation. Well, some people heard that conversation and on our Facebook wrote back in and talked about it, how they thought it was on the one. To have a conversation talking about exactly like I'm talking right now, we need to get a different kind of leadership going in our inner cities. We need it very badly. We need to work together. I mean, I cannot begin to tell you how many programs that are forming right now as we speak. Over in my small little city of Kansas City, Kansas, I bet I have 10 programs that are forming. And the thing about it, when you put all of these organizations together, the same people go to the same session each time a session is held. It's got to the point there's so many of them now, they're all falling on the same day, the same night. You can't make them all. So here you got a handful of people that are constantly being able to be depended on to be able to go out and try to make things happen that are just being pulled apart, being pulled in so many different directions. You know, when will we understand? When will we stop? When will we realize what we should be doing is bringing those 10 organizations, those 10 groups that are trying to form something, and let's sit down at a table with one another, because obviously money's got to be coming from somewhere for those 10 organizations to be able to exist. But the losers are the people who live in the community. Because past an executive director being paid to run a program and a clerical staff to help maintain and shuffle papers and then a few field people to go around and knock on doors, no one else is benefiting from the program except a good message. We got ministers passing good messages. So what I'm saying that we need to be able, and that's not going to happen until people demand that to happen. Because as long as we continue to allow what's going on to exist, that's exactly what we're going to get. I stop and think now. First of all, I think Obama, regardless of what anybody else would want to say, was our first and probably our last environmental president. We probably won't have another environmental president. But I feel the environmental movement let him down. I've watched John Kerman. Many of you know who he is. He has literally been fighting a battle all on his own dealing with these pipelines. Literally. The environmental movement has not stepped up to the plate to embrace what he's trying to accomplish and say. Where are they? When you talk about the environmental movement, I'm talking about the one, the heavyweights, the one that's slinging the money. And they're slinging money, believe me. Where are they? You know, I mean, this has been going across the board. I mean, gardens. I mean, food deserts. Kansas City, Kansas is a food desert. People been begging for a grocery store. They going to get one. But the process is political. That's what we up against, people. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, I was talking to John before we went on the air, and we're talking about the differences in people. We as a human race are going to have to transcend this political streak that we have that flows through us now, that the only way we solve problems or we address problems is one side of the group get on one side, get for people of the issue, get on one side of the room, the other side of the issue, get on the other side, and you just sit back and just shoot jabs at each other. That's all we see going on, because again, the losers are us. We're losing in the deal. I heard a statistic this morning that the stock markets they broke into 8,000 plus or something for the first time since 2000, I think, that year. And the person that was saying it said, obviously somebody's making money. Or the Walmart. This is telling their employees to bring in donations and stuff so they can provide for the employees that are suffering, so they can have a holiday. Or McDonald's that's encouraging their workers to go apply for food stamps so they can survive. But yet and still, on the other side of both of those companies, McDonald's and Walmart, the stockholders are raking in the bucks. Someone said that if half of what the stockholders had made had been used to benefit the employees working for both of those companies, I know for Walmart for a fact that they could have been paying the employees something like $12 to $15 an hour. You know, I mean, that's where we are. That's where we are. All right, I'm going to take a break. I went a little bit long on this one, so we'll be back with you in a second.
The October 1st deadline for implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act has passed. So what's happening? How can uninsured people become insured? What are the rules, and how can you help make this a success? Scott Lakin and Sarah Starnes, both social workers and both involved in helping people sign up for the Affordable Care Act, are going to be our guests on the All Souls Forum this Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
Hey, do you want to get rid of your unused car, motorcycle, or boat and help KKFI at the same time? The proceeds from the sale of your vehicle will benefit KKFI, and the law allows a tax deduction equal to the gross proceeds from the sale of the donated vehicle. For more information, call the toll-free number at 1-866-628-2277.
All right, I'm back. Again, let me start out with the number, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Y'all got me sitting there talking. That's fine. It's not that I have any problem talking. And if any of you who know me, you know that. But if you want to join me here, you know, help me out. If not, I can handle it by myself. Now I got broad shoulders. Also, I wanted to take time to wish everyone a happy holiday. Happy Thanksgiving for those of you who can accept it from that perspective, and happy holidays for those who can't. This is that time of year. We get a chance to celebrate with our loved ones. Also, keep in mind those of us who are on foreign shores. Keep in mind those of us who are in our war zones or war areas. I was with the mother of a guy that's in Afghanistan, and she has taken in his wife and his babies while he's overseas. I was there with Fuskari, who is my better half. Stopped by to see her this morning, and of course her and Fus just broke out in tears. And you know, it makes you think about what's happening in America and the things that we're dealing with, the things that our families are having to deal with. You know, grandparents are under a lot of pressure with their children being in these wars, and their grandchildren being back here, and they're talking about being able to get the forward to being able to see them on Skype, and you know, and you know, that's a whole new culture that is formed in this country. And, you know, and I don't want to sit up here and act like everything is negative, because it's not. I love life, and I think there's a lot of good things going on, even though you probably wouldn't believe that about me from the way I've been talking. But sometimes we need to clear the air. Sometimes we need to talk about things that need to be taken a look at. And I'm just going to be honest with you. I see the handwriting on the wall. And if, in fact, we don't start having some production out of these environmental programs that's going on, when the next line of cuts come, it's going to be the environmental programs. And I'm telling you that. They're cutting food stamps. They're cutting out social service programs. And you can believe, if the environmental movement doesn't become productive, you're going to start seeing cuts to the environmental movement, too. Phone number is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. You know, this past weekend I was able to talk to people, and I talk to people all the time, so I can't say that. But there's one thing that I always get when I find out when I'm talking to people is how eager they are to learn. See, and right now in the presentation that I'm making to neighborhood groups, I'm talking about climate change. And the one thing I'm noticing is how little is being taught to regular folks, the me's and you's of the world. You know, you'd be surprised how little our retirees know about climate change. You'd be surprised how little they know about carbon, what that problem is, and what's causing the problem that we have with carbon in this country. Greenhouse gases. I'll throw those words out, and you can see the blank looks on people's faces. And these are good people, worked all their life, some middle-class job even, that have retired and just now are living the life of a retiree. But there's no active efforts to educate that portion of our population. And see, I see that as a mistake, because those people are the ones that's raising our grandbabies, whether you want to know it or not. Just like I told you, the lady at the laundry here, she's got the grandbabies living with her while her son is overseas in the military. So it's good for them to be made aware of the environmental circumstances that's going on in this country so that they can be on the front line teaching those kids at home. The one thing that happened to me in Detroit, I talked to teachers forever, and all of them, of course, you know, would say, oh, yeah, we're doing a great job. We're doing a great job. We've got some great programs. And I agree. I think the schools are doing a wonderful job teaching robotics and STEM education type programs. STEM education being science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I think our schools are doing a wonderful job in preparing our children for the future. The only problem that I find is that those courses and that teaching that's going on in school is not transferring back home. So since now 98% of your public school teachers don't live in the city, at 3 o'clock, the teachers are gone, their education concepts are gone. And so those students are being returned to a non-STEM education world. I saw a program that was being put together in Denver with public housing with another environmental organization, and one of the reasons was that those children in public housing need to be able to visually see some type of environmental thing going on in their life, either when they're on their way to school or come home from school. Something around them needs to make them cognizant of the environmental world ahead for them. You know, and so that's what we need to think about when we talk about our kids not being able to, the work that they're getting not transferring back home. One reason, there's nothing for them to identify what they're learning with back in their community. So this is one of those areas where, go again to your city planners. We need to intentionally place things within geographic areas of our low income and our public housing so that they will be on a level playing field when it comes to being able to compete in life. Because to have the kind of sustainable world that we're all working and knowing we need to have, it has to be inclusive of everyone. So as much as I want to see Johnny in Blue Valley learn to be able to split an atom, I want to be able to see Charlie over in the public housing learn how to store it. Okay? There's always going to be a way for some relationships to be formed. And we cannot continue to allow a certain portion of our population to be subjected to less than what would be a credible lifestyle. And that has to come from us all. We all have to be in a position to make that kind of change. Number again, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. I have no problem continuing to talk about environmental literacy. Environmental literacy, that's what it's all about. We need to make sure that we make that a top priority. We should not feel that the public school or the school system, private or whatever, is the only place that those kind of subjects should be taught. Neighborhood centers, our wives, our boys' clubs, our churches. I mean, when I grew up, I attended what was called BPU. Excuse me for that. But it was Baptist Training Unit, BTU. That was a class you went to at night. Yes, on Sunday evening, all the kids would show up. And it had some type of outdoor activity about it during the warmer weather, you know, where we went outside and did things. But it was something that we engaged in as a group, and we learned. And I'm saying, regardless of where our youth can maybe be found, we need to make sure that they are being exposed to some kind of environmental concept. That's the environmental community's responsibility to do this. I was very pleased with the Sierra Club for coming to bat and supporting me in this trip to Detroit. You know, and having them as a major organization to be there helping to teach others or introduce others to what we're trying to accomplish is what this whole thing is about. You know, I had an incident, and I sent out some kind of a photo layout. You know, I like to tell a story with pictures, so I put together a bunch of pictures of my trip and then tell people what it was about and write a little story with it. And I sent out one over the weekend that dealt with this experience I had in Detroit. And it all started when a couple of girls came by, and these were public school students. They probably were like sophomores. You know, I'm getting old, so it's hard for me to determine ages anymore. But they came by, and I asked them if they knew anything about STEM education, and to my surprise, they said no. Okay, right there, my flag went up. They didn't know anything about STEM education. I know you're going to say, well, that's Detroit. What would you expect? Well, I wouldn't have expected that. I mean, you know, we're paying people every day to teach our kids. And you can't tell me that even in Detroit that you don't have professional educators that realize that STEM education is a necessity. So I brought them over to the booth and started sharing with them what we were doing, what we are actively doing here in Kansas City. When I say we, I'm talking about my organization. And showed them some of the things we did this past summer with creating a STEM summer school and also a STEM education summer camp that we got our kids to participate in. And they were just floored. The next thing I know, I went from two students to a total of about 10, maybe 15 students. They just kept coming, And all of a sudden, my little booth was completely just surrounded with kids. You know, and I'm there teaching. You know me, I'm in my world right now, boy. I'm showing them photos of our kids here in Kansas City and showing them kids down at the river testing water. You know, I got a little guy with his pants dagnum hanging. He's testing water and writing down his figures, doing a little scientific experiment. I got a group that's testing a basketball. This is stuff we put together this summer. This didn't come out of no school. This was in a neighborhood center. I had kids doing a scientific test with a basketball to see the difference in it bouncing from 3 feet and 2 feet. I mean, this is the stuff that's going on. Not necessarily all this is coming from me. This is coming from some of the people that that has got excited about doing this and are creating these projects and things for kids. And so I'm showing them how we was doing all that, and I'm going through all the stuff. And then I had a little information about what was going on in Detroit. I started, of course, from the intermodal business. I'm in part of the intermodal group here in Kansas City. That's freight transportation. And I had a chance to show them what's happening with Detroit. They got a real bad intermodal problem up there with their freight, with the river and the tractor-trailer trucks and the trains and the diesel and all of that stuff. And I'm showing them different information I had about Detroit. And so then the lady, their instructor, called them because the kids who were there with me were actually there as an orchestra. They were putting on a performance at the conference. So their instructor got into call and made noise for them to know it was time to go. So they all started leaving except one. This one young man remained. And he was so impressed with what had been said. And he just wanted to have some. You could tell he was a brainiac. He wanted to have something he could take with him so he could continue to follow up on it. And I had an intermodal book with me that I had received from the group out there in California. And I gave him a copy of that. And all of that I just told you, we got on, had pictures of it. Got individual pictures of it. And so I put that together in a photo layout and sent it out. And it's been interesting, the responses that I've been receiving. Sherry Green, for those of you who may know her, sent probably the best one. And I told her I was going to find some way to be able to send out her response so other people could see it. Still looking for that call. I'm getting close. I'm halfway through the show now. I'm still waiting on that person to say, hey, I'm going to call in here. I got something I want to share. 816-931-5534. Maybe you want to call in and tell me what you're going to do for Thanksgiving. I'm even willing to listen to that. 816-931-5534. Boy, I tell you, it's got to be a good one. Oh, the typhoon that happened over in the Philippines. I wanted to talk about that too. That was horrible. That was horrible, and I know what the problem was we got a call. Hang on just a second. Let's see if that's someone calling in for me. Somebody might be calling in to tell them to tell me to shut up. I think they're working on it over there. Hold on. Yeah, they're working on the name over there, so you know they got to do the screen and make sure I haven't got a maniac calling me. You know, that's one. Okay. They're handing me something. Okay, all right. Caller, is she on the air? You on the air? And will you give us your first name and where you're calling from, please?
Yeah, JP out in Shawnee.
Yes, sir, JP.
You on the air? And will you give us your first name?
Oh, you need to turn your phone, your radio down, JP.
Yeah, turn the radio down now.
JP.
Turn the radio down. I just want to thank you for your show tonight. I want to thank you for mentioning Mike Murphy. Mike's a good guy, obviously.
Yes.
To all the listeners, and our hearts go out to him. And we're listening to you. We thank you for all you do. You do so much good. And I don't necessarily have any other comments. I just want to let you know you're not alone. We're listening to you, and we appreciate your show.
All right. Thank you, JP. I really appreciate that. And you don't know how much that means, okay?
Yeah.
Anybody that's ever been in a business or working with people or doing the kind of things that we do, you know how lonely it can get.
I just wish that all the left organizations could somehow come together and to unite and to get some synergy from that and some traction. But what you're doing is fantastic. We appreciate it, and thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you calling in.
Bye.
And I agree with you 100%. When I was, before I came up to the show, when I was at home, one of the things that I thought about was exactly what you said, JP. It's ridiculous. They need to come around that table. We got to stop this this just it's like it's cutthroat, you know. And it's a shame. You can't even, people are afraid to even comment because they think that when they do, someone is going to take their idea and run with it, and you know, and so consequently, we act like enemies. We don't act like American public. We don't act like Americans. We do not act like Americans. We act like we each other's enemies. Okay, I got another call coming in. Will you give me your first name and part of the city you're calling from, please?
Okay, my name is Anthony, and I'm calling from Wyandotte County, Kansas.
Hey, what's up, Anthony? Talk to me, brother.
All right. You know, you mentioned the organizations that's in Wyandotte County, Kansas, Kansas area, like might be 10 or so organizations that all have meetings on the same days, and you know, you can't get enough people to go to one meeting because there's others scheduled that same day.
Right.
Is there any kind of way that you can say, if you got time to do it today or on your next show, list those organizations so people can be aware of them? Because some, I can imagine some people aren't aware of a lot of these organizations that's going on, and that way we can put it out there on the air that way, and I'll mention to the people at my church and my coworkers and things like that to stay tuned, or I can pass the information on if I get them today, those organizations where people can get involved. And you took one of my points that I was going to say earlier when you were talking about we need to get in touch with the grandparents, because they do a lot of raising of children in this area, and through them we can open up our children's eyes.
Thank you, Anthony. I will answer this for you. Okay.
Okay.
Now on the groups, and I agree with you, and I will do that. I will sit down and make up a list of these groups. And the next time I'm on the air, I will definitely, that'll be part of my presentation, to come back in with a list. But you got one that right now has picked Kansas City, Kansas, and it's coming from the Federal Reserve, and they're calling on Wyandotte County people to step up to the plate to be involved. My only concern is they're doing the same thing they've been doing, and they have a fraction of the community. Like right now, you don't know, and I know you're a community involved person because you listen to this show.
Yes.
You don't know about this. Here you talking about you wish you knew about these things so you could share it with the people at your church. Well, if you're going to come into a community and you're going to try to make a change, the first change you need to do is to get away from those same people that have been running that community for the last 40 years. Try to find people who want to come and really make a difference in what you're trying to accomplish. They meet, I'm going to tell you right now, December, their next meeting is December the 3rd. It's going to be at the I think at the Jack Reardon Center on 5th in Minnesota. Now, the reason I'm not going to be there, the NAACP is another one of those organizations.
Okay.
And they're having a meeting on December the 3rd. You understand what I'm saying? So some of the key people are already split on being between these two meetings.
I see exactly what you're saying. They're not helping the community at all.
Not helping at all. There's another group that works that from the school perspective. There's a young brother over there that used to work for Kaufman that's now a vice principal at Slagle High School. And he's trying to start a community advisory group to work with them inside the school on what they can do with the kids. Now, you know that I'm on the list with them, but I can't never make the meeting. His meeting is the same day as these other two meetings. I can't make the meetings. I mean, that's three meetings in one day, and all three of them are important. But one person can't make three meetings in one day. And there might be two more meetings that same day. Then you have the Northeast Optimist Club. I think that's another group with some really sharp brothers and so on there that's really dedicated and committed to trying to do something in the neighborhood. Same thing. They're caught up in a situation that their meeting is at a time when other things are going on. Then you have the there's one more group, because I'm involved with every last one of them. So the Black Chamber of Commerce.
Okay.
Another group. To me, there should never be a meeting held in Wyandotte County that's talking about any kind of development that you don't have a chamber of commerce sitting at the table.
That's correct.
If it's not about economics, then we're wasting our time because we live in a community that has an economic problem.
Okay. Environmental problem. Just as much as an economic problem.
Economic problem. We can find ways to combine the two. I don't know if you heard my conversation with that was recorded last week with the professor over at UMKC, but I'm going to have him back on the show because he is over there teaching young people. That's why since we made that recording, he had me come over right track the night before I went to Detroit. I went over and spoke to his class. Because he is adamant about them understanding that to embrace an environment in a capitalistic system means that you need to be capitalistic, but not dogmatic in the sense that you're using people, abusing people, or treating people as pawns. But that in an environmentally sustainable community, economics has to be a factor.
The two can't work without each other.
That's it.
In order for this to be a balanced world, not just a community, but a world.
That's right.
It all needs to coincide together, and I agree with you 100%.
Well, one reason the Kansas City, Kansas, and I'm not negating the other areas around Kansas City, Kansas. I think we all should be focusing in on Kansas City, Kansas. And the reason is unique enough to get your hands around everything. And
yes,
that's
sir.
Why I think the Federal Reserve picked it, but they're coming in with the same kind of concept. They're not. You got to come in with a different kind of concept. Collaboration is what needs to be taught first. We need to stop and learn what collaboration means. Collaboration doesn't mean you sit down with and design a package and walk in the room and go, okay, Charlie, you got these 10, Fred, you got those 6, Ethel, you got these 15, and Mary, you got these 5. Let's go do it. That's not collaboration. That's just another form of organization. Collaboration has to be that each one of those individuals had the ability to design their part of the package. Because that's how you take ownership for what it is they need to do. When you give a person something to do, they don't necessarily have to take ownership for it because it wasn't their thing. It was something you gave them to do. We're going to collaborate. Let's start at square ground level one and collaborate. Federal Reserve, you know no more about developing the inner city than I do. So because you Federal Reserve don't mean you do. So if you're going to come
to
the table acting like you do, then basically all you're doing is what we've been dealing with from the jump. We want people to be able to express themselves, and let's learn together. Anthony, I got to run. I got to take a break.
Okay.
But you know I love you calling in, brother. Keep listening out there, okay?
Okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do whatever I can to help. And it might be a little, but sometimes a little can mean a lot.
Well, you, you
I'm
find...
I'm going to speak
you,
on this... this Wednesday.
Do you find a way to make contact with me, Andy? And then I'll see if I can't help you get involved in some of this stuff, okay?
Okay, I really appreciate that.
Okay, take care, brother.
Okay.
On this week's Heartland Labor Forum, we'll present our Thanksgiving music special for all our KKFI friends, union members, our military troops and their families, and listeners everywhere who fight for truth, justice, and the American way. Happy Thanksgiving. We thank you. That's Heartland Labor Forum, Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Do you or one of your friends or family members own a small business? A great way for businesses to attract new customers is by donating gift certificates or other goods and services to the KKFI Holiday Online Auction. Donating businesses earn goodwill, attract new customers, and support community radio all at the same time. To donate, contact Bill at KKFI. Call 816-994-7869.
All righty, I'm back, and I want to thank Anthony and JP for calling. I still got time out there if somebody else wants to call in. I'm 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. It makes me, they made me not feel like I was alone sitting up in here. You know, even though, like I told you, I have no problem. Give me a mic in an hour and I can talk your ears off. There's no problem with that at all. I want to make sure that I give some props out to the people who are out here trying to make things happen. You know, I feel a lot of folks got hit with some false illusions back in the day. And somewhere along the way, we're going to stop and talk about it. But when you think back in 2008 with the introduction of the stimulus money into our economy, you know, I'll never forget, you know, we look back at it now, and I remember when they decided what the amount of money for Kansas was going to be. And out of that almost a million package that Obama had, the cut for Kansas was going to be $600 million. That's what, let me make sure I get there, $600 million, yeah. So my figures may be wrong, but whatever, because I can't remember what the package was. Oh, yeah, $700 billion, that's what it was, $700 billion, because it was almost $1 trillion. The cut for Kansas was $600 million. And I remember when I first when that money was rolling into Kansas, I saw some article somewhere that said the first thing the state did, and that was the former president, that former governor, not Brownback, but the first thing the state did was took $600,000. I think it was $900,000 was the cut for Kansas, and the first thing the state did was took $900,000 off the top. Of that, took $600,000 off the top of that $900,000 for state use, and they left $300,000 for the rest of the state to compete for individually, as far as local city type uses. So you can see right from the jump, the people level was cut short right from the jump, and it's kind of been that way throughout this whole program. You know, when you think in terms, I heard that when you thought, I won't mention names because that just doesn't get things done, but one of our utility companies was installing these smart meters. And then decided, I guess all of a sudden, that those smart meters wasn't working. So, I mean, wasn't prudent. Let's use that word. Wasn't prudent. So they stopped. Okay, so here you got people that had finally got to a point of thinking, well, okay, I want to get one. And I want you to know, I found this out by being in a meeting. And one of the guys, one of the residents was in a meeting, and he asked a member of the utility company why he hadn't got his meter yet. And a member of the utility company told him because he had stopped installing. See what I mean? I mean, people are the last to know. They're the last to know. And I think that's, you know, when you talk about KKFI and what its value is and has been, I support it 100% because it is one of the only places in town that is able to say it up front like it is. We don't have those power attachments that control what we say or what we don't say. All right, gang, I've reached the end of my show. It's time for us to go to our little closing so we can get ready for our next group that's coming on. Happy Thanksgiving to you all. Appreciate you out there listening, for hanging in here with me. Mike, we love you. Look forward to you coming back home. And everybody be safe this holiday. God bless you all.